The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and don't reflect the official policy or position of the podcast, right, Sarah?
Correct.
Any of the, quote, fire content, I prefer lava content, provided by our guests, blogger, sponsors, or authors are the opinion and are not intended to malign a religion, a group, a club, an organization, business individual, anyone or anything, unless, Sarah?
You're a douchebag.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Also, we're not doctors, psychologists, or wizards. We're just two non-experts trying to make you a friendly, informative podcast based on our experience that we've turned into wisdom.
Okay. Good talk.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Sarah Edmondson here.
And I'm Anthony Ames, a.k.a. Nippy, Sarah's husband. And you're listening to
A Little Bit Culty,
a.k.a. ALBC, a podcast about what happens when devotion goes to the dark side.
We've been there and back again. A little about us. True story. We met and fell in love in a cult. And then we woke up and got the hell out of Dodge.
And the whole thing was captured in the HBO docuseries The Vow, now in its second season.
I also wrote about our experience in my memoir, Scarred, the true story of how I escaped Nexium, the cult that bound my life.
Look at us, a couple of married podcasters who just happen to have a weekly date night where we interview experts and advocates in things like cult awareness and mind control.
Wait. This does not count toward date night, babe. We got to schedule that. That's separate.
So it's 2 days we got to hang out?
We do this podcast thing because we learned a lot on our exit ramp out of Nexium, still on that journey, and we want to pay the lessons forward with the help of other cult survivors and whistleblowers.
We know all too well that culty things happen. It happens to people every day across every walk of life. So join us each week to tackle these culty dynamics, everywhere from online dating to megachurches and multi-level marketing.
This stuff really is everywhere. The cultiverse just keeps on expanding, and so are we. Welcome to Season 5 of A Little Bit Culty, serving cult content and word salads weekly on your favorite podcast platforms. Learn more at alittlebitculty.com. Welcome back, everybody, to this week's episode of A Little Bit Culty. We have a very special guest today, somebody who jumped the queue because this information is breaking news in the cultiverse.
And he's our most invited guest so far.
Episode 3 with the investigative reporter extraordinaire, Jennings Brown.
JB.
If you've listened to our episode with Teal Swan and Fellowship of Friends, you'll know how awesome he is. And if you haven't, go back and listen.
His podcast, The Gateway, which focuses on Teal Swan, inspired a docuseries called The Deep End on Hulu and Freeform.
After recording his last episode with us, Jennings was flooded with all sorts of tips about culty organizations around the world. The most alarming story of all was that of Liana Shanti, the bizarre and deeply unsettling tale of the Lumerian Sisters.
The Lumerian Sisters. Seriously, come on. Where do we even start with that? We've got an online wellness and spirituality guru amassing female followers at an alarming rate, telling them to cut ties with their family, which she calls family cults, in order to save their children from a ruling class of evil reptilian creatures who created the COVID-19 scamdemic, which is actually just a Luciferian tool to harvest their innocent souls.
Ugh. Clearly inspired by QAnon, doesn't originality count for anything anymore? She warned her followers that government would soon force unvaccinated adults and children into concentration camps and that they needed to move with their kids to Florida where they would be safe. This is such a crazy amalgamation of like all of the things we've already discussed in this podcast, like parental alienation with Dr. Cocciola, cutting families off, like disconnecting like Scientology. There's elements of being a prepper. There's new age stuff, wellness, like from Goop, MLM, catfishing.
Cult of the algorithm.
And she says she has a direct line to Jesus. Again,
of course.
Big red flag.
Of course. And the Akashic Records make an appearance.
And then like throw in some like truths about like how great green juice is, because we know I'm a big fan of that, and like damaging aspects of the patriarchy.
Are you saying green juice is a red flag?
It is now. It is now.
I mean...
But the question is, who's the real woman behind Liana Shanti's airbrushed, nymph-like online persona, and what is her fate? According to an ex-member in Jennings' reporting for the Daily Beast, she collects private information and she weaponizes people's pain points.
Sounds familiar, Sarah.
She is the ultimate spiritual grifter, and today, Jennings Brown breaks it down for us.
Welcome, JB. Another cult, another interview.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Well, we have so much to ask you about our topic for today. Tell us a little bit about like what's happened since we saw you last, since you were reporting on Teal Swan, and then how did this come into your purview, this new topic?
Yeah, I mean, you actually play a part in it. I was on like about a year ago after The Deep End had come out. So we were talking about Teal Swan, and I'd also released the Revelations podcast about the Fellowship of Friends. And I got flooded with tips after that. Like my Twitter and Instagram DMs are just like a garbage fire of weird culty, you know, and spiritual abuse and trauma. And I mean, it's great. It's like, it's a blessing and a curse, because I never know when I check my DMs if it's going to be like a fun meme or something related to this. But it's, you know, as a journalist, it's great to have tips, and highly encourage any listeners to keep those coming, because I mean, I've got so many things I'm looking into now. But one of them really stood out and just honestly, it horrified me. I was like, this is like a type of spiritual organization I haven't seen before. It seemed like somebody was kind of taking the Teal playbook and truly amplifying it. And a lot of insidious stuff was happening, and a lot of families and a lot of children were wrapped up into it. So I dove in pretty quickly and, you know, have been investigating this character, Liana Shanti, since then.
And what was your first red flag that it was really no bueno?
Well, the way it was presented to me is like it was this former Wall Street lawyer who had created this new, who had this sort of catfish alter ego character online and was driving women around the world to like cut off their families and basically take their children overnight and like move them all across national and state borders to certain places that Liana was telling them to go, mostly Florida. So you had a lot of people in Canada and all over the country, but a large contingent in Canada. Anyway, they're all moving to Florida to kind of prepare for the end of the world. And it was all sort of wrapped up in fear of vaccines and mandates and all that. I mean, that's where it started, but it got truly, you know, it was like they're sort of these reptilian overlords that are creating all of this fear around the pandemic, and they're gonna, you know, lock you and your children up into concentration camps and force you to get vaccinated. And the vaccine kills the soul. And if you go near anybody who's been vaccinated, you know, they can it will shed on you and harm you. So there was just this real frenzy of fear that I think she whipped up online, and had people just leaving. I mean, again, in the middle of the night, like taking their kids and whatever they could put in their car and fleeing to Florida and just cutting off their entire family.
Did it start out that way? Or what, like when you talk to ex-members, what was the thing that initially drew them? Because it usually doesn't start so extreme, right?
Right. It started pretty chill. And then I think during the pandemic, like a lot of things, it got really radical and ramped up. Yeah, I mean, it took me a long time to figure out who was sort of behind this and the origin story. But Liana Shanti appeared online in like 2012 as this sort of online spiritual, it was more like health stuff. It was kind of like vegan health, like raw diet things and juice cleanses.
That's where I would have been hooked, by the way.
Right. Like a lot of people got into it, you know, it's yeah. Like a lot of people who, like one woman who was a major source, you know, said like it was her third kid and she was having postpartum depression and health issues, and doctors weren't taking her seriously, and she felt very gaslight by you know the medical institution. Like she was like, I don't want to feel this way, and they were like, maybe you're making it up. So she went on looking for answers online and found this community. I mean, the kind of entry point is the Health Mastery Institute. It's this thing that Liana created, and it's just like, you know, and then there's like this online Facebook community of all these women who are followers who are very supportive. And she finally found the validation that she always wanted in this group, that she wanted from doctors. And it was pretty basic stuff, like cut out processed foods, and, you know, it'll help your hormones balance. And it worked. And then they were like, well, I think you need to, you know, if you've healed your body and mind, now you need to go deeper into the spiritual teachings. And that's when they go deeper into Liana's like Lemurian Mystery School is kind of the name of this group that is more in the spiritual stuff.
And also 10 years ago, that wasn't on your radar for any, it wasn't a red flag 10 years ago to be doing stuff like that, right? It was kind of somewhat benign.
Right. And it wasn't that stuff wasn't introduced then. I mean, it was pretty, at first he was just giving health advice. And then over time people were like, wow, you cured my cancer. You helped me with this. And I think it kind of fed her ego. And she started a lot of like self mythologizing. And, you know, she's been talking to Jesus ever since she was two, and she survived two near-death experiences, one like being struck by lightning, and she can access the Akashic records, much like Teal Swan and a lot of spiritual gurus, you know, all the information in the universe. They're stored in whales, which
that's
goes,
new,
there's
right?
a lot of like, that's new.
That's new.
She, so she's from Lemuria, like I think a descendant of Lemuria, which is kind of like Atlantis, but it's more like women empowerment Atlantis. So she's from Lemuria, and the whales, a lot of the kind of aesthetics are sort of this like dolphins and mermaids and whales and unicorns and very like Lisa Frank. And it's mostly women followers. I mean, it's like 99% women followers, and they're all Lemurian sisters, and they're all going to kind of return to Lemuria. And then she gives them Lemurian names that she reads from the Akashic records, which are all sound very Hawaiian. It's all kind of seems like appropriated from like Pacific Islander culture stuff, you know, like Malia, Kalea, you know, names like that. But anyway, so it was like slowly evolving. She was getting more like a goddess, and people started kind of calling her Jesus because she had the access to Jesus, and she wouldn't correct them. And then right before COVID, she had about like 50 hardcore followers then. And that's when there was a lot of chaos and things were shutting down so quickly, and we didn't know who to listen to. And, you know, a lot of like, I mean, it was so chaotic and scary, and people had trusted her, and they were all very, you know, they're very active in her Facebook group, even though, you know, they've never met her. They don't, nobody talks to her. Nobody meets her in person. I mean, it's all audio courses and text and messages.
And still?
Yeah. Yeah. She's still, people refer to her as a catfish, because this character online that she's created, it looks very different from the real person. I mean, it's like this young, ageless, beautiful, almost like cartoonish character that they're all following, who is sort of a fabrication, very similar to QAnon or something, where people are just kind of following the teachings of this online person that they've never met and they don't know the true identity of. But during COVID, she really started ramping it up as people were going to her for, and you know, she was, at first it was very calming, like, hey, don't buy into the panic, you know, just take your vitamin C, like, just, you were going to get through this. And I think it was very comforting. But then she started saying like, don't do Zoom because that's how they capture your soul or something. And so that was a main source of...
That might be true, actually.
True. Absolutely. I mean, with a lot of this stuff, there's like kernels of truth.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But it's... Yeah, but you know, that was like a way we all sort of communicated and found social connection. And she was like, don't go to national parks or certain places because you might get abducted.
Well, she's controlling information and behavior.
Bingo. Yeah. And she was able to do it all online because of the conditions of the pandemic. And a lot of this stuff, I've realized, like a lot of the things that cults and high control groups have to spend years doing, you know, she was able to sort of do online. Like there was a lot of posting of confessions in the group, and then now she sort of weaponizes that, you know, when it takes like groups that get this sort of collateral over years. Well, she would, you know, people are like eager to post that now. And then once she kicks them out, you know, if they, like some people get kicked out, they'll say, for instance, she'll say, don't listen to any other podcast. Don't communicate with anybody outside of this Facebook group. And they're like, well, what about Joe Rogan? I thought you liked Joe Rogan. And she'll be like, nope, you're out. She'll kick him out for challenging her. And then she'll start posting all these confessions and like tagging their employers and then, you know, bringing up their family and like warping it into darker things.
You saw proof of her doing that?
Yes. I mean, they sent me, I have, you know, thousands of screenshots from these internal Facebook conversations, then eventually moved to Signal. And the darker part of that I was able to confirm through talking to ex-members and through talking and through these corroborating with these screenshots is it starts where you listen to her audio courses. There's mother wound, father wound, narcissistic. I've listened to them and they're very compelling and it's very like hypnotic. And she has you listen to these like hour, 2 hour courses multiple times a day, and they start to kind of cast a shadow over your childhood memories. You know, you're kind of thinking like, well, that maybe that time they left me in the car to go in the grocery store, it was abuse. Maybe like when they were hugging me, it was grooming. I mean, it if you go into it fresh without an awareness of this kind of stuff, it does kind of shape your understanding. And she has people, you know, there's these private signal groups where people are encouraged to ask her questions, and then she accesses the Akashic records and reads psychically what happened. And people are, I mean, it was like every day people were like, I have a memory of like something happening. Did somebody abuse me? And she'd say, yes. You know, it was always like, you know, she would always provide clarity. And it was always like, yes, you were sexually abused in this way by this person. And then like they started asking about their kids, because she'll say things like, if your kid's wetting your bed, it's a sign that they've been sexually abused. So then they'll ask like, well, who's abusing my kid? And they'll say, well, it's your brother. It's your husband or whatever. And then they'll go to the husband or the family and be like, hey, I think I'm starting to think that, you know, my kid or I was abused in my childhood. childhood. And then they don't respond well to that because it's out of nowhere from somebody they've been talking to online. So then they go back to Leon and they're like, well, my dad didn't believe me or my husband didn't believe me. And she's like, well, it's because he's cheating on you or it's because they abused you. And then these memories become very real. And again, this is the sort of stuff you see with a lot of groups and Teal Swan, this kind of like altering of memory or like, I mean, it's a very messy topic, but, and I'm not here to say that everybody involved in this group, I mean, obviously like statistically, you know, I'm sure that there is a lot of abuse and pain and suffering in this group. And like a lot of these allegations can be real, but there's this pattern of people joining and then these allegations come up, these new memories, and then the majority, if not like 90% of the women or more, divorce their husbands after joining the group and cut off their family. And a good percentage of them like picked up their kids and fled to Florida to prepare for this sort of apocalyptic event. And the kids are wrapped up in this. And a lot of them, and Liana sort of urges people to try to get sole custody of the kids. And, you know, a lot of these people are starting to realize that maybe the father is an abuser through working with Liana. So there's, I mean, I had one woman tell me, you know, she coached her child to say that the dad abused her and she got in the Child Protective Services. And there seems to be a lot of this. I can't confirm that everybody's doing it. I know of two instances where, you know, one woman was found to be by a jury to be coaching her child to say that the father abused them. And one woman told me she, you know, because of working with Liana, she says in her words, I was so brainwashed that I believed that my child was being abused or hurt by my husband. So I did the coaching thing and she filmed him and sent it to Child Protective Services. CPS found nothing. She ended up kind of spiraling from all these new realizations and had all this new anxiety and panic attacks, ended up going to inpatient psychiatric care. And that's where it started to crack that she, because Liana says, you know, counselors are evil, doctors are evil, psychiatrists are evil. But here she was like, oh, these people do seem to be trying to help me. Also, she was logged off. She couldn't really access the Facebook group. So it kind of helped break the programming. And now she's like, I could not have asked for a better father to my children. I was just so caught up in it that I was convinced that he was evil and harmful and that my parents were and my family was. And she just totally cut off her entire family all because she, you know, she joined looking for answers about her postpartum health issues. And then it just completely, you know, shattered her life and her family life.
Is it a case where if there's not buy-in and you're not incentivized to find these problems with you that you're shunned, like she kicks you out? So if you're not kind of obedient to her process, that's problematic.
Yeah. I think a part of it is just, it's sort of some of it is sort of the social engineering within the group. You know, everybody, there's a real urge. Like every time she releases a new course, a new program, I mean, she has all these audio courses that are hundreds or thousands of dollars. And she's always releasing like new ones about business or, you know, your mother wound, your father wound and all that. And there's a real urge to get them as soon as she drops them, you know, and some people are like, well, I bought it a second time because, you know, it was helping me so much. And then there's also, you know, there's a lot of health and candida cleanses and coffee enemas in these teachings. So people will be like, oh, I went however many days doing juice cleanses, you know, and there's, so they're real push to outdo each other. And so I'm sure she doesn't discourage that. And it seems like she does encourage that. So something is within the group to just do everything. And yeah, I mean, I feel like it's, she'll tell people like you're low frequency, whatever. I think that can kind of be a signal to like, you're not paying for these courses and you need to find a way. And she'll have people like quit their jobs to sort of become a health coach. And of course, if they're a health coach, they're only selling her programs. So there is kind of a MLM component to this where they're all teaching their courses.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that in my notes. It's such an interesting combination of the sales of the MLM and then like the end times of like a lot of the extreme Christian religions mixed with some health and wellness of Goop and like the new age of the Akashic records with this like prepper, you know, don't trust the government situation. And then the Scientology of disconnection. Like it's like she pulled from every single thing that we've talked about on this podcast. Not that she pulled from our podcast, but you know what I mean?
That's why it's such an amalgamation of all the things. And it, again, the fact that it's all online and it's people connecting from all, I mean, there are people in India and Australia, I mean, all over the world that are getting wrapped up in this. And like ex-members call it the Great Migration, when there was just like a month where she was like, leave now, they're putting you in concentration camps. And all of these women all over the world just like moved to different places with their kids just because this woman online told them.
And you heard 38, right? About 38 families for sure that you know of moved?
Yeah, that's an ex-member told me she could, and she seemed to have a pretty encyclopedic understanding of everything in the group, was very involved and said she could count 38 moms that in this period Yeah.
Wow.
God, that's 38 families, right?
Yeah. And these kids, obviously, like they're, you know, I've seen YouTube videos from some of these kids and they are using, they're doing like Liana's teachings. I mean, apparently one kid like visited her grandparents and the grandparents were vaccinated. So when the daughter, like the 8 or 10 year old got back, the mom made her do a coffee enema against her will as a way to kind of like clear it out. I mean, these kids are going through all these, you know, their memories are being affected and they're, I think, being physically abused.
This is the golden age of cult recovery. The more we speak up and share our stories, the more we realize we are not alone. Your voice and your story can empower others. This is Sarah, and I'm proud to be a founding collaborator of the hashtag IGotOut movement. Learn more at IGotOut.org.
Do you notice the distinctions? I mean, you've looked into Teal, you've looked into Fellowship of Friends. Is there a refinement or kind of an adaptation that she's used? Do you find that the process is getting a little bit more subversive, or is it pretty much the same and the distinctions between Atil and Liana?
I think a lot of it is, and I can get pretty dystopian with this, I'll try to hold off, but I think a lot of it's just technology and the algorithm. It makes it so much easier. I mean, now people are sending me TikTokers who are kind of becoming cult leaders overnight because it sort of rewards anybody who says something out of the norm that's kind of like against status quo, you know, then they're like, they're canceled and they become a martyr and then like, and then, you know, build a following for, you know, challenging, you know, the conventional thinking. And then, you know, if they're prone to sort of narcissistic thinking, maybe they like use that, weaponize that. Like, I think you're seeing, I mean, it's like technology, this, she had it all sort of built in. I mean, in this like Facebook group, and because of the conditions around COVID, you had the isolation, you had the information control, like you said. I mean, it was really easy for her to collect collateral, and she could do it all from her phone. And also another thing is this woman, I mean, she is very clever. She was a lawyer, and then she became a timeshare salesperson, who I think was incredible at that, and then had this sort of, I think, a spiritual awakening, changed her name, created this character online. But she's clearly a good salesperson, and she clearly has a legal brain. But she's also, I mean, she's convicted felon. I mean, she was convicted for bankruptcy fraud. She's currently serving 5-year probation. And right before COVID started, she got sentenced, and she wasn't allowed to travel. And so she was even more isolated than a lot of people. She lives in Hawaii, which is not a bad place, I think, to be stuck. But, you know, she couldn't really travel without permission of a court. So she was trapped during COVID, but she created this sort of world online where she was a god and had all these followers. And they were almost kind of like these video game characters, I think, that were trapped in. And you know, in this beautiful land of Lemuria that she painted for them. I mean, in a lot of these audio courses, she paints this world of Lemuria, and it's very enticing. And especially during COVID, it's like, yeah, we're all going to escape to this beautiful island and be these, you know, light workers. I think that was very appealing. And anyway, so she was able to, I think, to like do all this just through her phone because of COVID and this sort of age we're in of the algorithmic anxiety, and the algorithms sort of feed on us and drive us to people like her. I mean, like I said, a lot of people were just Googling their health issues or pregnancy issues and like came to her online courses in the same way like Teal did. I think Teal was she was kind of a perfect person of the moment, early YouTube. I mean, she really learned how to, she just churned out content. She had videos for everything. So people would type in questions about suicide or diet or Akashic records and chakras and find her videos. And, or then YouTube would like also just, the algorithm would drive them to her. And I would ask people, you know, when did you find Teal? And they were like, well, I put an intention in the universe and YouTube gave me her video. And I'm like, well, that's the algorithm. That's good SEO, you know? But it's like, we have a long history of confusing technology with magic and, you know,
God.
Yeah. But I think that's happening here is like, it feels like there's some sort of divine inspiration when really it's just the algorithm driving people there. So I think she's just kind of she had the perfect mind to sort of seize on that moment.
Do you think that she, like, you know, we've since learned that Keith had this whole library and he read Dianetics and he was like, you know, directly plagiarizing from a number of spiritual leaders. Do you think she did as well? Or how do you think she put together this hodgepodge of a belief system? Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, normally I get a really, like with Teal, I spend a lot of time and I got a better understanding. I'm still actively looking into this and trying to get like a better understanding of her history. So I hope to have a better answer for that in the future. But yeah, it seems like she's pulling from a lot of, I think she consumes a lot of media. She's always on her phone. I mean, she posts on her stories like 100 or so times a day, oftentimes attacking people. Yeah, it's like that's her main way of teaching, is people follow her Instagram stories. She has like 23,000 followers.
Yeah, 22,000 I saw. Yeah.
I think most of those might be, or I don't know how many of them are real, but she does have a core group that follows her there, and she's constantly posting. She's constantly attacking people.
Well, I noticed that she has adopted the playbook to gaslight by she's saying people are doing to her what she's doing to people. And she uses like the sound bites of the day to kind of justify what she's doing and saying, oh, these are just people that want to make me seem small. And then she's taking kernels of truth from the patriarchy and leveraging her victimhood through being a woman and saying it's men that want to keep her small and they gaslight me. And she has the prepackaged narratives because she knows, I think she's clever, and she knows the objections to what she's doing because people see the abuse of power that she's doing. And she has these sound bites kind of ready. So it's an interesting, and this is something that Sarah and I have come into contact with. It's like any sort of questioning of your process is proof of the oppression in a lot of ways. She's quick to that, is from what I saw looking through her Instagram page.
Yeah. And I think it is important to, I think, point out she was fired from her, she was selling timeshares at Wyndham. She filed a class action lawsuit. It sounds like there was a lot of pretty bad sexual harassment and discrimination at her company.
It isn't to say that it doesn't exist at all.
Of course.
Yeah. It's yeah, yeah.
I just mean that I think that is a part of important part of her origin story possibly. Yeah. That could have like, I feel like there is a understanding of like this morning maybe traumatic experience inspired her to like, you know what? I am going to burn it all to the ground. But yes, to your point, I think she is pulling from a lot of stuff. I mean, look, she's like, look, Nexium, like clearly in Epstein, you know, a lot of people pull from those that it's like, yes, this stuff does happen. And people got away with it for years. And, you know, and now she's pointing to, I think there's always creating these new boogeymans that are pulled from the headlines.
Right.
And
right. There you go. Well put.
Yeah. Recently, I think it was like the East Palestine, the train derailment and, you know, all that biohazard, you know, East Palestine in the US.
Ohio region.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. She, you know, was like, oh, well, that was, I think, like a government thing. And now you can't drink water or live in a certain stream. So she's having people move through that.
Never let a good crisis go to waste.
There you go.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a big, you know, government fuck up. I mean, bureaucratic. I mean, yes, it is. There is some truth. Like, yeah, they could have avoided that, but I don't think it was as conspiratorial as, you know, she will say.
I guess it beckons the question, and this isn't devil's advocate or anything, but I guess it's like, you think she's cognizant of what she's doing? She knows what she's doing? Or is she just angry? She has an axe to grind and she's willing to tear the whole thing down because she has an axe to grind? Is it, how calculated, I guess, is it under your impression?
I've gone back and forth, and I got some clarity because she was ordered to court recently. So we got to see who she is in real life.
You were there?
No, I was not. I got a, you know, court transcript and somebody who was there gave me the full rundown. But I reported on that because the Daily Beast, my investigation came out about a month ago, and then that got the awareness of her probation officer, who I think, you know, was very alarmed that, you know, like, because if you're on probation for bank fraud, you know, you have to like, or bankruptcy fraud, you have to be doing things by the books. You know, and you, I think, you know, and your probation officer is supposed to have access to your records. And there's a lot of shady stuff going on. I mean, her Health Mastery Institute is registered in Nevada under the name of one of her followers. There's just a lot. And I think this, the probation officer's like, whoa, whoa, this is not what I thought was going on. So the judge ordered her to court to discuss this. And so she came. And I mean, and that was, I was amazed because like oftentimes this takes, you know, months or years before you see any kind of legal action with spiritual leaders and spiritual grifters. And, you know, so I was pretty amazed by that. But in it, like, she kind of said a lot of, she was got pretty conspiratorial. I mean, she ended up speaking to the judge on her own behalf, and it was pretty bananas. I mean, I wrote it, but I took some of the snippets and put in my article, but it's like, she was really pushing these sort of, this idea of memory planting came from a man who was a pedophile and it was a way to, you know, discredit, da da da, and like just sort of spiraling and rambling and saying, well, I can see evil and it's my right as a human and a Christian to call out evil. And, you know, I have evidence that these men were abusing their kids. And then the judge like stopped her. She's like, wait, you have evidence of child abuse? And she's like, yeah, I have a video. She's like, wait, somebody filmed a video of this. And And she's like, Leon's like, well, maybe it wasn't that. And like the judge is like, you're a lawyer. Like you should know better than just say that you have, like you're saying, I mean, you need to be careful here. And it was just so fascinating to see this sort of back and forth with like a lawyer turned spiritual guru being challenged by a judge who clearly, I mean, from my reading was not having it. And was like, well, you know, as a judge, you know, like people can plant false memory. I mean, you know, this happens. And then anyway, it was just wild to see someone like, I don't know. I mean, obviously Keith never spoke. So you didn't really get to see, I mean, you saw like him, his writings to the judge or whatever. Right. But you didn't see like someone trying to reason from the spiritual to the real world. Anyway, it was just fascinating to see that.
Well, that's because I think Keith knew he was lying. Keith knew that under the jury of his peers and asked direct questions, he doesn't answer direct questions. He switches the narrative and ends up answering a different question that he wants, which to me, maybe I'm wrong, at least tells me he's somewhat aware of what he's doing. But if she's subjecting herself to a judge and she's a lawyer, I don't know, maybe there's some mental stuff going on there, but who knows?
I was thinking that she would try to defend it, you know, like the sort of Alex Jones, like, oh, well, you know, some of it's performance. You know, I thought like that was his sort of, I think, argument. But no, she seems to be the same person that she's online that she was in the court. And I was surprised. So that makes me think she does believe it to an extent.
Yeah, that's my impression.
The person that was there, did they tell you anything about like the discrepancy between her like airbrushed anime sort of porn star vibe versus the reality vibe?
Yeah, I think that was a big reason that I think. So there's a group of people who they've lost family members to the group and they've kind of gotten together and they've been researching it and trying to shed light on this. And this is who one of them initially reached out to me after listening to this podcast and also reached out to you. And I know mm-hmm. had some interaction with you.
Yes. Is this the Liani Shanti Cult Recovery Instagram page?
Yes. Yeah. So that's like the main group that are trying and they've been a great source of information. But it was important to them to get an eye in there and see what she really looks like. And sure enough, they confirmed she did not look like in the pictures. You know, so in real life, she's, you know, 52-year-old mother living in kind of suburban Hawaii. Online, she again looks like this sort of ageless nymph-like character. But yeah, they confirmed that in real life, she was there. She had what appeared to be a wig. She did not have the same physicality of her online character, and also they were tickled that she had to wear a mask in the courtroom. The judge orders people to wear a mask, and I think Leon is incredibly anti-mask, so I'm sure she did not like that.
That's just like poetic justice in my mind.
Well, it's the thing that comes to mind now is like, you know, when we were growing up, like in the 80s or whatever, you would see these kinds of things like in the shape of like a Tammy Faye or it was extreme, and it seems like because of the internet, you can have pockets of these people that fool, you know, a small niche group, and it's enough for them to make a living, and they don't have to get on television, evangelize, and all that stuff. And you can make a case that, you know, people that gave their money to religious groups back in the day ruined families as well, right? You know, I'm sure it happened. And these algorithm people that just have like an avatar, they can like have their families go online with this persona, like it's their job, like put on the avatar, then take it off and it was a day at work.
You're able to cast a wide net and find the people who your toxic message resonates the deepest with. Yeah, she knows how to use that.
Hey there, listener. Hope you're enjoying this episode and that you're taking deep breaths when we cover the enraging stuff that cult jerks are up to. Let it out. As in the yoga practice, inhale positivity, exhale negativity. That's for you, Sarah. We got this. No hulking it out, all you little hulksters. And if you need some helpful resources on the topic of cult recovery, check out our website at alittlebitculty.com. And now, here's a brief message from our sponsors.
Nippy, Jennings and I were messaging about this. I'm not sure if I told you, but the thing that really kind of, I don't want to say excited me, because never really exciting, but it's just, I feel like there's a shift perhaps in the cultiverse with how these things are being handled, that Jennings wrote this article for the Daily Beast and that initiated court proceedings within like six, seven weeks, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was a difference that, you know, she was on probation. So there was a very clear thing here for them to call her in for. And the hearing was just about related to her probation. So one of the orders or conditions in her probation is that if she poses a risk to society, they can order her to inform her clients that she is a convicted felon. So what they were discussing in the last hearing is like, well, I think that you need to post prominently on your website, not buried, and you need to post maybe like twice a week on your all your Instagram accounts associated with you. As Leanne Wilson, that's her real birth, like that's how she was born. As Leanne Wilson, I was convicted of bankruptcy fraud. So that's what they're currently discussing, how she is going to inform her followers and clients of that. So also a big part of this is after the story came out, her probation officer and the judge were flooded with 25 or more letters of victim impact statements of all these families. And I think that was very overwhelming. I mean, that was a shift that over like the course of a year, I was interviewing all these people who were so understandably scared because she was sort of the wizard behind the curtain, and they knew she was like a big deal lawyer, and they knew her followers were rabid. And what's different here is like a lot of cult-like groups, you know, have you cut off from your family, but here it's like emotional terrorism. Like they would go inside these two sisters who were followers sneaked inside their parents' house and tore up all the family photos. You know, there's a lot of like posting their confessions online about like calling parents sex abusers and things like that. I mean, it's a lot of just like actual, like really hurting their family members rather than just cutting them off.
Well, she's inflicting some real pain.
So people are really, really afraid to go anywhere near it. And even within this group of people trying to expose her, there's a lot of distrust. They have to vet everybody that comes in, and there's like an intake form, and they vet them before they reveal their identity. And there was a lot of like secrecy and like concern and hurt and just months of building rapport and getting people comfortable sharing because they're afraid of what she's going to do. And I mean, because she does attack people violently online, and she encourages her followers to get police reports on people and, you know, to take them to court. And anyway, so it's very messy. And to see all of these people who experienced such a weird kind of trauma. I mean, that's a reason that a lot of cult survivors don't speak out, is it's such a weird kind of, you know, spiritual abuse. It's really hard to explain to a judge or a normal person who's outside of that world. And the story came out and they saw the reaction. They saw people talking about it. They were very emboldened to speak out and like, yeah, we are not alone experiencing this very weird kind of, you know, because it sounds very conspiratorial. If you say, you know, my wife started listening to these audio courses and then she just completely transformed and started giving our kid coffee enemas and fled to Florida, you sound crazy. But so finally, it's like to see so many of these people who are so scared, like come together and mobilize so quickly, gave me a lot of hope that like something is shifting. Like they were so quick, like, you know, this is what we're going to do. And then the judge seemed to have taken this so seriously and really understood what she was saying around like planting memories and how dangerous that is with children. And I don't know, it just gave me a lot of hope that I think like all of this sort of education around like what you're doing and you know, these documentaries and stuff, I mean, they come with their own problems. A lot of, you know, it's like there is also a fear of like trauma porn and the cult documentary industrial complex.
Yes.
But I think that there is kind of a, I don't know. I was just like, I was so prepared. It's like with Teal, you know, nothing's changed. And I'm not saying that she needs to go to prison, but I feel like there should be more transparency at these groups and the Fellowship of Friends. They've been operating for 50 years, pretty unscathed. But to see, I mean, it's small and I think it's just the beginning, but to see the court take this seriously so quickly, it just felt like a bit of a shift.
Yeah, the collective consciousness is headed that way because of how information's being disseminated and it's not being controlled. And I think responsible minds eventually, right now, it's like everyone's going hog wild with their theories and who's right and who's wrong and all that stuff. But I think when it settles, there's wisdom to be extracted from it. And hopefully it gets into, you know, places that it wasn't previously. And I think legally, you know, our case was one where, you know, we kind of had to educate on course of control, and now
it's standard, or feels more standard.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have a platform that's gotten course of control out, and to hear a judge in Hawaii, right? My guess is a little bit out of the mainstream, understand it is encouraging.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this judge does seem very savvy and bright, and maybe that was just like we found it happened to fall into the right judge. You know, I don't know. There is some good coming from all of this talking into a microphone, I guess.
Yeah, thank God. Thank goodness that makes me feel better.
We're putting something good into the mic.
It's not just a hobby podcast. Yeah. How much of her podcast did you listen to?
So I listened to a lot of her audio courses because I think that's where the real stuff is happening. The podcast is more, it's pretty, you listen to it, you're like, oh, this is fine. Like, I think it's an interesting gateway. Yeah, you're like, oh, this is, it just sounds like a woman who listens to a lot of Joe Rogan and kind of wants to do her own thing. Or it's kind of like girl boss. Like, it's very accessible.
She sounds pretty normal, too, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me think she knows what she's doing, because she's able to compartmentalize one personality on a podcast and then go hog wild in her private whatever.
Yeah. And I said that I think that she, I've gone back and forth and I'm kind of in one mindset because of the hearing, but now that I'm stepping back, I mean, I have heard there are other things that are starting to come out that show that there are many different versions of her. And so maybe she was Liana in the courtroom, but I think there are other things. And I think that we're just starting to scratch the surface as far as the mysterious Liana Shanti and all the things that she's done and gotten into.
When you were listening to the recordings, you know, I read the article where the husband decided to listen because he wanted to help his wife and got a little bit hooked himself. Did you see how that's plausible? Did you see the hook and did you get that far?
Yeah, that was like one of the spookier aspects. And that's how I sort of opened the story to help people understand. I mean, they were happily married for like 23 years, high school sweethearts, and everything was good, happy family. He was on a course to retire very young. I mean, in his like 40s. And she, during COVID or around then, she started listening to these courses and she just transformed. It was almost like this Kafka-esque, like waking up one day and you're living with a different person. And you know, they started having fights over what to feed the kids. And then she was like constantly listening to these courses. And then she would like come up and have questions about their marriage. Cause the courses are like how to deal with a narcissistic, abusive relationship. And you listen to these courses and every relationship sounds narcissistic and abusive. You listen to enough and it starts to shape your views. And she took the kids and left. And over like, I mean, it was just kind of, I mean, there were fights, but this is the thing where you're like, all of a sudden your partner is bringing up all these things out of nowhere and you kind of can't help but react in a natural way that pushes back. And then that confirms what Liana's teaching. So it's kind of this self-fulfilling prophecy. So they're having these fights and these men are like getting obviously very like upset and like protective of their kids. And so then she left and didn't tell him where he went and like finally got to FaceTime them. And his kids were like in a barn and looked scared, according to him, which was horrifying. And then he was like, finally decided, you know, I want to try to help my relationship, fix my relationship. So he started listening to these courses and they had an effect on him. It started to change the way he viewed his mom. He cut off his mom. He used to love his dad. His dad is dead, but it made him like, it changed his memories of his dad. And then his sister was trying to figure out what was going on with her brother and her sister-in-law. So she joined the Facebook group and then she got into it and started plotting to like take the kids to Florida, afraid that they were going to get locked up in a concentration camp. So talking to these people, I'm like, this is like a contagion. I mean, this is like Black Mirror shit, you know, like, and it's all from this woman who they don't know what she looks like, that they've never seen or none of her followers have met. And that kind of power to like, beep, 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 hit every person, like three people in a family and change their understanding of their, I mean, I was like, this is unlike anything I've ever seen.
Also, they're entering it with some level of awareness.
Yeah, I am fully inoculated. You know, I go into by that point when I was listening to it, I was like, I know enough, but I'm like, oh, I get it. But I think it was through, you know, reporting on Teal and all this that they kind of had some inoculation, but I was fully vaccinated.
That's a good show title. Fully vaccinated against Liana Shanti.
I told a friend of mine that I had coffee this morning a little bit about the interview I'm going to do today and like the cult of the algorithm. And we did an episode like in our first season of someone who went down the far right cult of the algorithm, watching YouTube videos and went in with the awareness of that's what she was watching to help her boyfriend. Similar story. And ultimately, the conversation got a little bit to AI and how AI is doing and how AI is just doubling in intelligence every 8 months. And then it's going to be able to emulate voices and images and stuff like that. And we were just kind of playing with it, you know, like what happens when, you know, AI is, it knows, it refines itself and it knows you and it knows, you know, your nuances and emulates that stuff. How are you going to be able to make the distinctions when,
bingo,
you know, it's not indoctrinating you into something?
That's what I was saying earlier. I could get real dystopian with it.
The Black Mirror thing. Yeah, you have to have this conversation. I mean, when I wrote the letter to Nancy about like, you know, okay, we're branding women now. Where does this go? Take this out 5-10 years. Like, I mean, how does it end? So you do that with this. Like, how does this?
With an army of badass, you know, bitches for Keith.
You have a generation of people who think they're peak intelligence. They're never going to know what it's like to go to a grocery store, buy a carton of milk without it being tracked. It's going to be the norm, right? Everyone's going to be able to know. So, you know, how do you, it's a tsunami coming and a couple people see the tsunami and other people are like, yeah, I'm going to jump in the tsunami because it's fun and it's fine. And it has my best interests at heart. And I'm an optimist, but that's a pretty scary thing because I don't, it's hard to figure out the punches that are coming.
She's kind of tapping into the fear of that wave. Is that what you mean?
No. I'm just saying there's this AI coming that is going to only get smarter and smarter.
I'm ready for that stoner conversation, that like next level. If we know that's another podcast, but it's like, it's like what happens when the AI figures out how to out Liana and just can do this all on? Because at first you're like, well, at least AI, there's never going to be that experience of like, meeting somebody in person. And now we're like, we don't need that. Like we're actually, we have a deeper connection with people on our phone. Eventually when she was saying like, don't go outside, don't do Zoom, don't listen. I will give you clips of Joe Rogan that you can listen to. You have to communicate in this Facebook group. And this was over the course of several months of the COVID and like things ramping up and they changed their names and, it was the frog slowly being boiled where all of a sudden you're only communicating in this Facebook group. She said, don't communicate with any of the Lemurian sisters outside of the Facebook group because I can't monitor your energy there. And everything they post in the group has to get approved by her to show up in the Facebook group. So they're only saying things that they know that she'll like. So it got even deeper than if you're like, you have this amazing experience with Keith where you're love bombed and feel very seen, but then you can go off and talk to people and someone are like, I don't buy it all. You can kind of have that challenging in those, but here there's not that. And these people she would say again, don't interact with anybody. Like even an emotional connection to somebody who's vaccinated can hurt you. And yeah, don't go to grocery stores because you can, the people will shed the vaccine. Don't go to doctors. Anyway, so yeah. So that the fact that it can all happen through somebody you've never even met, there's not much before we get an AI version of that, I think.
Maybe she is AI. Maybe she's a reptile.
Maybe I would be inclined to think that.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I call it.
She's the original Q-bomb.
Q-a-mom. I feel like I've seen some articles of like the rise, like I think Rolling Stone, EJ Dixon, who covers a lot of this stuff, did the rise of the Q-a-mom. It is a thing, but like this is like the first, like I think deeply like Q-a-mom cult-like group. Where she was teaching a lot of like QAnon adjacent teachings. It is mostly targeted at moms. It is getting moms to like take their kids and flee in the middle of the night. I mean, yeah, this is, it's like, it's QAmon.
Sarah, I better not
listen,
wake up with
I
Troy
just gotta
and Ace
say,
gone tomorrow.
I right feel lucky that I didn't fall prey to this one because, I do like the, not so much now, but like, early 2010, I was totally into the raw green. I mean, I still do green juice, mind you, but like the health and wellness stuff is a real portal for me.
Well, that's how they get
you. Some of the early members, I can totally see you really vibing with. I mean, the ones that joined in the beginning and that were in for the vegan stuff, I mean, they're like,
yeah.
I mean, they joined in like 2012 to 2013. I mean, that could be you, Sarah.
That could have been me. It could have been me. Yeah.
If not for Keith.
Definitely, the irony is not lost on me. And there are lots of questions, most of which I think you've answered.
With regards to her face, it is important to note, like, a lot of people use filters. And heavy filters. And I think that some detractors get really focused on that. And it can kind of get into misogynistic territory because I feel like a lot of these, spiritual bro leaders like wouldn't get attacked for, enhancing their muscles or whatever. But it is a symbol of, I think, like just the duplicity. Like people who've left are like, and they see the real picture and they're like, holy shit, that's not at all who I imagined being, my Jesus. So I think that there is a level of deception there, but I think I do want, people to keep people in check. Not y'all, but just I think in general, I think there's a quickness to judge people like Teal or Liana in ways that you wouldn't if it were, like a tech bro spiritual guru or something.
Absolutely.
I totally agree.
And to clarify, I'm not judging what they look like in real life. I'm judging that they're lying about it.
Yeah, yeah. I get it. I'm not. Yeah. Yeah.
Judge away. Judge away, sir. We're not the judgment police.
Let's just leave it there. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you want people to know?
It's been a while since I've been kind of reporting and that there's been breaking news to bring in. And people keep reaching out to me with new stuff that's blowing my mind. And I can't, it's like stuff I still have to confirm, but there's so much going on here. She's a Mr. Ripley.
Yeah. Please do keep us posted too of things that we can share with our audience.
Yeah, that's how I get my best source of material. And just started a Substack where I'm gonna, because I was so overloaded with stuff that I couldn't get out. So I'll be posting a lot of stuff there and people can kind of follow along with updates. So yeah, so reach out and JenningsBrown@protonmail.com for if you just want to email me tips.
That's great. I actually have a couple people I'm going to send your way because I think people reach out to us as a podcast thinking that we are you, which we're not. Like we're not investigative journalists. We're not journalists.
We're not journalists.
I don't always know where to send them.
Yeah. I mean, you do a lot of journalistic adjacent work, I think, But yeah, you forwarded a couple to me that I really appreciate. And yeah, you're always welcome to send stuff to me too.
Perfect. We will, especially over this summer.
Well, thank you, Jennings.
Thank you, Jennings.
And thanks for the work that you do. It's very informative. So thanks a lot.
Thanks for getting it out there.
Go team.
This podcast is brought to you by Citizens of Sound, a podcast production agency committed to developing and launching shows with gravity and depth. From conception to launch, Citizens will partner with you every step of the way, whether you're an actor, business owner, doctor, fitness coach, hairstylist, or influencer. Connection is the future of communication. Jump on board with Citizens of Sound today and start your show. Go to citizensofsound.com and follow them on Instagram. And trust me, it'll be a really good decision for you.
I don't know. It sounds like, you know, Black Mirror stuff.
The other thing I forgot to mention with him, which I think is really important, if you listen to her podcast, which don't listen to too much because I don't want you to get like brainwashed or hypnotized.
Seriously.
She's like really good at pointing out actual real culty things that are happening in like churches and families and those dynamics. You'd never suspect that she would be operating in the same way if you don't have this education, don't you think?
Well, that's the whole thing. You never suspect it. That's what makes these things so dangerous. And the people that think, oh, I can never fall for it. There's people that went into it with eyes wide open and still fell for it. So look, same story, different algorithm, right?
Yep. Let us know what you think.
Thank God for Jennings Brown.
Oh, thanks everybody.
Thanks.
See you later. And maybe even on Patreon this week where we get to talk to Jennings in person. You don't want to miss it. Bye now. Only 3 spots left to be on our team. Just kidding. Talk to you later. Bye. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean. I'm hanging on to the weight of my love. If I let go of it all, I could leave. But I know I won't.
Hope you liked this episode. Let's keep the conversation going and come hang out with us on Patreon, where we keep the tape rolling each week with special episodes just for Patreon subscribers and where we get deep into the weeds of unpacking every episode of The Vow.
And if you're looking for our show notes or some sweet, sweet swag or official ALBC podcast merch or a list of our most recommended cult recovery resources, visit our website at alittlebitculty.com.
And for more background on what brought us here, check out Sarah's page-turning memoir. It's called Scarred: True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life. It's available on Amazon, Audible, narrated by my wife, and at most bookstores.
A Little Bit Culty is a Talkhouse podcast and a Trace 120 production. We're executive produced by Sarah Edmondson and Anthony Nippy Ames, with writing, research, and additional production support by senior producer Jess Tardy. We're edited, mixed, and mastered by our rocking producer, Will Rutherford of Citizens of Sound. And our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Aslan. Thank you for listening.